There's not that many people that when I meet them, there's an instant physiological change in me, as in my body senses how powerful they are, how wise they are, how grounded they are. And today's guest is one of those people. And that's what I felt in my body when I was in her presence. And then I heard her speak and I realized why I felt that way. Deeply grounded, deeply wise, in her gifts. Really such a love and care for people to see them change, grow, heal, and become everything that they desire. She's a powerful woman, and I'm honored to say that she has become a friend. And before we dive into this episode with this magical sage, wherever you get this podcast, make sure you hit that subscribe button. That is one tremendous way, if not the best way, that you can help support the show. And without further ado, here's Tracy Litt. I'm curious, where are you stuck in love, in your relationships, in your life, and even just in your life, right? Because, you know, maybe you're constantly attracting the wrong partners, unavailable people, or you're healing from heartbreak and you don't know how to move forward. Maybe you're in a relationship, but it's plateaued and you're wondering, is this it? And how do I move beyond this? Whatever your situation is, I created something to help you get clarity fast. It's a free quiz called Where Are You Stuck in Love? This quiz will show you whether your next step is working on self-love, healing your past, learning to date with intention, or deepening your current relationship. The truth is, we can't change what we don't see. This quiz helps you pinpoint exactly what is keeping you from the love you want and gives you clear, guided advice on what to do next. Over 2,000 people have already taken it and had a major aha moment. You're next. Go to createthelove.com/quiz right now. That's createthelove.com/quiz, and let's get you unstuck. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today, I feel like a boxing announcer. I've got Tracy Litt with 172 knockouts. How's that sound?
At least today.
What are you knocking out? What are you knocking out?
Oh, what am I knocking out? I'm knocking out the lie of unworthiness. I'm knocking out dependency, external and co. I'm knocking out control. I'm knocking out limitation. I'm knocking out the paradigms of the past that masquerade as the way to success. That is what I am knocking out today.
Oh, that's delicious. I think every human on the planet would like to knock some of these, may I say, bitches out.
That's right. That's right. I feel like I need a robe and gloves and a little like.
Yeah, we need some Rocky. Totally, totally. Well, let's start with what is the biggest one there that you mentioned that you think all begins with? Like if we're looking at the transformation, change, evolution, because I know that's what you specialize in, is not just facilitating it, but facilitating facilitators in it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, where do we begin?
We begin in two places, moving from your unconscious identity to your highly conscious identity, which is another way of saying moving from the unworthy identity to the wholeness identity, because all of the control and the judgment and the codependency and the lack and all of that exists in the unworthy identity, which really just means you're living under the lie and you're not fully awake to what's available to you and what the truth is.
How do you know if you're in that lie?
That's such a great question. And here's why. Every single spiritual energetic being having a human experience, which is every single one of us, has to move through that lie.
Like we have to start there.
Yeah.
The journey.
Yes. And not like have to because we're choosing it, but have to based on the biological egocentricity of how we become who we are when we are younger and things occur in our experience. We don't have a conscious mind until we're 8. So all of those occurrences are forced because our ego is wired for protection to move into self-internalization. So if your father leaves, or your mother's volatile, or your parents fight about money, or your sibling is having issues and taking it out on you, all the different things that occur, the only thing that we can do in that early stage is to self-internalize and unconsciously make it about us in our lack of significance, lack of importance, taking responsibility for it, ultimately landing us into the I'm not enough lie, because we don't have the discernment and the consciousness to be like, well, you know, my dad left, but he's just unhealed. Or my mom's volatile and she just had a shitty day, right? So I love this moment because the lie of unworthiness is so harmful and so unhelpful and so unhealthy. And when we think that it's optional, when we think that we actually are not enough, we own it. And what I'm saying to you is, you had no choice. No one comes through unscathed. Every person you know, maybe admire, maybe follow, maybe hold it to a different light, every one of us had to come through the unworthy identity biologically.
Just through the way that evolution works.
Correct.
And through the lens that if there's something that happens in those years of unconscious programming, that we, I want to say 100%, but I think just for the sake of the one person who will be like, no, 100% of the time, 99.999, we make that experience about us. And so there's like a, what you're saying is there's an identity that is created within that I am not enough, and I'm not enough because of these things that have occurred in my life, my culture, my environment, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I see that. I've never thought all of us go through it.
Oh, but all
that
of
makes
us.
Sense. Yeah, all it makes sense.
Yeah. And even to the beautiful 0.001% person who you want to think differently, I love you, but that's just your ego trying to protect you from realizing this is the truth. This is what is. And when you understand, which is why I'm a science and spirituality teacher, and you really get like the whole biology of the show that we're in, just allow yourself to sense the liberation of like, hold on a second. So what you're telling me is that like, what? It's not my fault. There was nothing ever wrong with me. It was all just an unconscious self-internalization. Yeah. And because we don't have consciousness until we're 8, we like to tack on as kids this little ending that says, and it'll always be like this. And it'll be like this forever. And then what we do is we create our life through the lens of that unworthy identity, collecting all this additional evidence that we put in like our imaginary suitcase that we carry through life. And then we can point to all of that. See, told you I'm not enough. See? Mm-hmm. And it's like, whoa, 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 you guys, no. No, not on my watch, not while I'm knocking these things out. You are too great. You are too whole. You are too phenomenal. You are too love for you to tolerate accepting that any longer. And that's the movement. That's the identity evolution. That's collective consciousness rising. That's each one of us recognizing our divine moral responsibility is to go within and heal out of the lie.
I love that you say it's a divine moral, you know, in a sense, obligation, because it's like, you can't not, like it appears as optional, but it is not optional, because if you say no right now, because eventually it'll come for your ass anyways.
That's right.
But if you say no to it, this invitation to discovering your reverence, your sacredness, your wholeness, all of it. Letting go of the lie, which is ironic that we're like afraid to go into the thing that lets go of the lie of unworthiness, because it's like, who am I if I'm not fucked up?
But, right? Yes. This is, I love you. So, but that's where our nervous system comes into play. And that's why identity evolution that isn't done at the level of the nervous system is ineffective.
Yeah,
because it's not that we're consciously like, I don't want to change out of this. Most people walk around and they know in their deep down, like they're ready to feel better. They're ready to allow more for themselves. But through creating your life in the unworthy identity, you have imprinted your nervous system and conditioned your cells to perceive that the only way is to stay the same, because it has to stay safe. Right? Because anything different to your nervous system, even moving from unworthiness to worthiness, is going to create an extreme feeling of unsafety at the level of your nervous system and tripwire your fear response and get you to sit back down and not do it.
I think for those of you listening or watching, like recognizing that even any transformation, but transformation especially that moves you towards peace, calm, relaxation, worthiness, you know, where you're making choices that say, I love me instead of choices that say, I'm not worthy of that. There, you know, as you're saying, is like that just the exact fact that there's change occurring to the system goes, peace out on this. Like I could take a little bit of change, but like this whole, we're not going to date unavailable people anymore thing. I mean, I know it's your shtick, but we're going to stick with them. I'm going to even pick unavailable people masquerading as available people just for a little bit to entertain your conscious mind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Because the nervous system is the command center and its job is survival. So it means safety, which means sameness. So the nervous system is here to wire you, is to keep you alive. And the only way that it deems you're going to get up tomorrow and breathe, which is the only thing it cares about, which is why it's wired for survival and not for you to live your best life and the best love of your life, then it's important to recognize that in the language of the nervous system, safe equals same. He must, she must, they
safe
must
equals
stay.
Same. I like
yes,
that.
Safe equals same. So it's not just about like when you do big things like speak on stages or start a podcast or, you know, whatever those things are that we like to think, oh, okay, that's when fear comes around. It's even more pervasive when you're making internal shifts, when you're shifting from an emotional familiarity of worry and anxiety into the emotions of your future of ease and trust.
And who thought that moving from anxiety to calm, like the fear about the future is what we've always known. And so like, if I'm to let go of this fear of hypervigilance and I actually, you know, gain access to my voice, steer my life, yeah, it makes so much sense that I'd be terrified of letting that go because it's preventing the alcoholic mom or the eruptive father or the, it's like trying to predict a future, but it's like, it's not necessary. I mean, it doesn't mean it's not necessary in the current relationships we're choosing, mm-hmm. but that we don't want to be in that anymore.
Right. That's why your consciousness in terms of your conscious mind has very little to do with it. And your ability to experience everything you keep saying you want and absolutely deserve lives in your ability to work at the level of your body. So that you can shift your brain and your mind working at the level of your nervous system, right? And something like hypervigilance, those are all adaptations. You weren't born hypervigilant. You weren't born hyper-independent. That was my adaptive behavior because control was my emotional addiction because I thought my whole life I had to control everything to be loved, right? And then how that translated. So it's like, wait a minute. So what I'm saying is you are now here listening to this conversation. And let's say you're 30, 40, 50 years old. You don't live in the world anymore that created that hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. You don't live in the world anymore that created that hyperindependence. And the way to untether from that is to actively become the version of you that trusts and knows you're safe within yourself and you're safe inside your body and you're safe in your experience so that you can untether from that adaptation, which is the thing that's getting in your way.
How do you begin to do that?
The first two steps, the first most important is awareness. Awareness is so loving, luscious, critical, and also discounted because people are like, oh, awareness? Yeah, awareness. Because we cannot shift anything that we're not aware of. And it has to be a very special kind of awareness. And we teach it as your NJO, your non-judgmental observer. it must be non-judgmental awareness, because one of the things that happens is you'll become aware of something, but because you're orienting to your evolution journey through victim consciousness or through your unworthiness, that identity then goes, ugh, I can't believe you. So you become aware of it and then you treat yourself like shit. You become aware of it and then you get pissed at the thing you became aware of. And that just doesn't make sense, right? Like you are you. Can we just stop being against ourselves? Like you are you. Mm. If you are not for you, who the is going to be for you?
Right.
Right.
And if you're not your own advocate, then.
Right. Like every relationship begins with the relationship you have with you and the way you relate to yourself. So when you work on your awareness, just your ability to notice, I invite you to start to imagine this like hologram version of yourself, right? That's your non-judgmental observer. She, he, they look just like you, but they're hologram-esque and their job is to lovingly be like, psst, Mark, you realize you rolled your eyes on that one? Psst, Tracy, isn't it interesting that you want to punch that person in the face? Like whatever the thing is that we notice, but we use curiosity and non-judgment. Because one of the things that keeps the unworthy identity rooted in is our deep, 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 deep compulsion to judgment.
Every human, you're saying our, so like every human has a deep compulsion for judgment.
Yes, until you don't.
Yeah.
Because judgment is such a, and this is so important through the lens of romance too, and love and relationships. Judgment is a protective mechanism to keep yourself disconnected from yourself and keep yourself disconnected from other people.
Yeah, it's such a great way of separating. True.
It is. It's just like, I'm going to judge that, therefore it stays away from me. Or I'm going to judge me, therefore I stay disconnected from me.
I'm curious if you see, because I've just been thinking about this recently, the overlap of judgment and envy. You know, because I found that when I'm in that ego state of like, let's say seeing someone who has something I want, that I go into judgment to sort of like discount their achievement of it.
Or that they're
not worthy of it. It's like a righteousness.
Yes.
I don't get it, but they get it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And really what that's lack. That's more lack and scarcity than it is anything else, because inherent in having an envious moment that turns to judgment versus envy that's like, oh, that's so great. That makes me realize that I want to do that too, right?
Yeah,
envy that turns to judgment, because the kind of like underbelly of that is, if they have it, then I can't have it too.
Right. Yeah.
Therefore, there isn't an overabundance of everything available.
Right. There's a scarce amount. Much like when we look at people, I remember thinking when I first started the relationship work and I was bringing awareness, you know, non-judgmental, but I remember driving down the street in Vancouver. I was single. And I saw this couple standing at the light and they were looking like they were having a good time, you know, good couple, happy. And I remember seeing the dude and I was like, why the fuck does he get her? Why does he get that? And I remember catching myself and being like, oh, I can't wait to have what they have, you know? And it was such a shift for me, because unconsciously I was having thoughts like that one all the time. But then as soon as I caught it, I just saw like, I'm not getting to celebrate the love they have and then like get more of that for me. I'm like, oh, I want that. I want her, you know, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fascinating when we're really drawn to people in relationship, that we're like trying to garner something that someone else already, you know, quote unquote has.
It's so important too, because in what you just said, the universe, that's my word. Everybody can use whatever, you know, God, you know, whatever you like, will never deliver you something you resent, right? So in that moment, we're like, ugh, why did she? It's like, whoa, hold on. And that's a perfect NJO moment. It's like your NJO is like, psst, yo, Mark, did you hear that thought? Let's take a moment.
You dick. You're such a dick. You know? I don't think that's a judgment. I think that's an accurate assessment of the... if we can bring levity, I definitely need my little non-judgmental observer to have some levity. Like,
yes.
Hey, you little fuck, what are you doing thinking that way about them? You know?
Yeah. Well, levity is a cure-all. Levity and playfulness, you know, like we were talking a few moments ago about anxiety, uncertainty, unknown, right? It's like the biology that gave us total fear of the unknown also gave us an antidote, which is levity.
Yeah.
You cannot be simultaneously concerned with uncertainty and also playful and silly and light at the same time.
That's so true. That you can't be in both. You can't, it's like when you're elated and in gratitude, you can't be depressed. It's impossible to hold, you know, that's why gratitude is such an elixir.
Such a heart opener.
You know, shown to be equally, if not more effective than medicinal, than pharmaceutical interventions. Same with exercise. You know, like you're saying to my body, like, I love moving. I love adventure. I love joy. I like pouring, you know, goodness into you. Your body can't be like, I'm so mad right now. Like, I can't believe we're going for a walk in nature and hanging out with trees.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's so, but all of these things are like that. Right? We are our own pharmacies. We are our own answers. If we're willing to understand how to move past the resistance and recognize what creators we are of our lives.
I'm curious, what do you think is the resistance to embodying that miraculousness of ourselves? Like, if you accept that you are that, what you're saying, then what does it mean?
The answer to what is the resistance is the biology of fear, right? Like understanding that we can want something, right? We can make our vision boards. We could be like, yes, like, let's just use love because we're here and having conversation in your beautiful community. You visualize the love. You want the love. And consciously, you're there, but your conscious mind is only 3% of what's creating your lived experience. And the other 97% is all in your body, your subconscious mind, the imprint of your nervous system. So you could want it all you want. Like, I'll use myself as an example, because the last piece of my evolution into my wholeness was around my romantic life. I had a very bad picker inside of me. And that was me, by the way. Yeah. And my daughter's father, our relationship ended when she was 8 months old, like, which is like, what? Like, we literally built a house, have a child, we're building a wife. And then 8 months in, over. My next relationship was a sociopath that I did not realize, obviously, was a sociopath. And I kept wanting something, but I wasn't being the version of me that I needed to be to allow for that, right? And it took a few real dark nights of the soul. It took being a single mother on food stamps with my 8-month-old daughter. And even then, the next relationship still landed in a really unhealthy pattern. And it wasn't until I kind of stopped everything and I said to myself, until you relate to yourself differently, until you start to work out what's stuck in this body, which was all of my old unworthiness stuff, you are going to continue to tolerate beneath you. You are going to continue to take red flags and paint them white, right? You're going to continue to squeeze the round hole into the square peg and call it fine. And that was a big part of me starting to go in, like, literally inside myself and realize that it didn't matter what I wanted at the level of my conscious mind. What was dictating my experience was everything that was stuck in my body.
I'm curious, because you're capable of having this conversation and reflecting on this, why do you think you matched with a sociopath after being through that relationship?
Couple things. Yeah. I just experienced the loss of my mother. So my mother died, I was 24. I had my daughter when I was 27, and I was still extremely raw. Yeah. And I recognized, actually, on a podcast where I just interviewed that daughter that's almost 21.
Oh, that's amazing. She's beautiful. Oh, I've seen pictures of you together. Yeah.
Thank you. I realized on that podcast, I created her because I was longing in so much grief for my mother, that what I did was create the closest thing I could do, which is become the mother and have a child.
Wow, that's powerful.
Thank you. I mean, we cry. It happened in real time. Like, you can watch it on the podcast. Like, what is happening? And
wow.
right? Like,
and for her to like unburden her of that.
It was.
Wow. I'm emotional thinking about it. What a gift of an awareness.
Such a gift that like we recognize too, like my mother passing gifted Taylor to this world.
Yeah. Yeah. The motivation isn't bad.
She's such a magnet. It's,
right.
Ugh. And my soul saved her soul and her soul saved mine, because when I became that single mother and she was 8 months old, had she not been in my experience, I would have stayed swimming in my victimhood and who knows where I'd be right now. But that pull, we know this as parents, right? That pull for someone beyond me that needed me. She needed a better model than who I was tolerating myself to be. And that started to pull me out. And interestingly enough, the other part of my life that kicked into gears was my career. And that's where I met the sociopath who was my boss at this career, which like was a huge lift for our lives. So why do I, or how do I reflect on what allowed me to move into another unhealthy romantic relationship? I was still so unhealed and I was still so grieving and I was still, this is very clear right now. It feels very clear. Here it comes. I was still seeking something outside of myself to affirm me. Mm-hmm. And I was seeking a little bit of pain and a little bit of punishment for things that I, for things I hadn't forgiven myself on when my mother was passing away.
So the way he treated you was a representation of, I'm so grateful that you answered that, because I think, you know, when someone's been through any circumstance like that, there's the totality of the experience, which is incredibly painful. So sometimes, and I'm sure for you listening or watching, you could have experienced my question, like, what a fucking dick, or like, that's victim blaming. But it's really like, how can we hold the totality of the experience and the both ends of like, it's awful and it's not okay. And yet, like, how did I miss something? And I'm curious, in your body, did you have a flag early that was like, if you go back, you know, to the stages of dating and relating? I'm sure HR had an issue with it, but other than HR.
Yeah, they didn't have much of an HR department. We got a lot, we got away with a lot of stuff. But
when you have a sociopathic.
As the VP. Leader, exactly. Yeah. Anything goes. You know, I was not connected to my body the way that I am now. And I think this is an important thing for me to share in my own story and also for you, you beautiful listener. When you're not connected to your body, that's when a lot of things continue to go awry. Because to be in your body requires you to at least move through a certain level of healing, a certain level of emotional decongestion, a certain level of change, which leads you to a certain level of awareness that you don't have when you're functioning from the neck up. And I was very much disassociated at that point. So I can't, I'm unable to say, how did it feel in my body then? It was all a mind thing for me at that point.
Yeah, like, he's a good fit. He's right on paper.
He's a good fit. And this little, like, my unworthy identity was still so ripe, raw, open. I think, especially with my mother's passing and then the relationship ending with my daughter's father and what that then kind of like affirmed more, like, you're not, that you don't see with your eyes, you see through your eyes. I didn't understand that. So what was driving my experience was, I'm just not worthy enough. I'm just not good enough. I just deserve a little bit of pain. I just deserve a little bit of punishment. I think there's something else in here that's coming through that's tied to, you know, my mother was my best friend. She was magnificent. And grief is the most stunning of all of the human emotions. And I hadn't grieved enough. And there was absolutely some survivor's guilt at play. Like, I'm here, so I'll just pick something unhealthy for me, unconsciously.
Yeah.
That feels very true.
Wow. How did that lead? Like when you leave that the relationship with the sociopath and, you know, you're left sort of exploring all of this stuff, what was the first invitation to exploring your unworthiness?
So I think this is a vital moment because I don't want anyone to get to this moment. There was an evening where this sociopath, we call him Fuckface, my sisters and I.
I like that. That's
just helpful.
Have you ever seen the show Sisters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm the middle of three girls and we are fiercely in love, my sisters and I. So my baby sister, who's 9 years younger than me, he had done one of his, you know, acts, one of his sociopathic acts. And she had said to me a few times, like, Trey, this is not you. You need to get out of this, you know, like almost like intervention style.
Yeah.
And I was saying, okay. But I wasn't listening or believing any of it. And he was trying to like make up with me, you know, because that's the pattern, gaslight and then come back and apologize and the whole thing. And we had these sliders in the condo that I lived in with Taylor on the first floor. And he came over after she took my phone. She's like, you're not answering him. We're not doing this. You're done. And then he came around the backyard and he was standing in front of the glass sliding glass door. So he's standing in front of the sliding glass door. I'm on the inside of the sliding glass door facing him and my sister. Never forget the best thing that ever happened. She stood in front of me, blocking him, and she looked at me and she said, if you open that door, I will never talk to you again. And I turned around and I walked away and I went in my bedroom and I cried. And she stayed with me for 3 days. And she kept my phone because I had to go full detox.
Yeah.
And he ranted and raved and did whatever he did outside. And then it was over. And she did that for me.
Being able to hold that shift, that change. You know, I think a lot about that sort of nervous system recalibration that's happening in real time when you have this entity, really, hooked into your nervous system, hooked into your self-worth, hooked into all of it, that when you get sober from it and your wholeness is able to feel what it means to not have something really like embedded in your system. And then you can feel like, for me, I know when I've felt into the spaces of where I've wanted someone to complete me, choose me, whatever, when the final recognition of the untethering of the wound being connected to them, you're left with the wound. Mm-hmm. And you're left with, you know, that's why I love what you said about grief, because you said grief is the most, I think, beautiful or potent.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in the space of the loss and in that grief, which I've been thinking about this a lot recently, is that that grief is not about the loss of them. It's about that you've been losing yourself, that you've lost yourself. And so it's always, even in the romantic movies, it's projected on the loss of the person. And it doesn't mean like, you know, obviously if I lost my partnership, I'd be deeply grieving that. But I would still know I'm okay. Like there's no doubt in my mind that I'd be okay. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like that before in losses. And I think that recalibration that occurred for 3 days, it often requires someone else to just stand beside you, to co-regulate with you, to be like, you're whole. Yes. Fuckface is Fuckface, and you are whole. What does that bring up for you? What do you think?
So you hit it on the head when you were talking about, you know, that wholeness piece, because while I was in that processing for those few days, and then obviously that was the opening of every moment of who I've become now, I had a very clear moment where I saw in my mind's eye the trajectory options, right? Like it's like you use the word sobering, right? So accurate, such a good word. So now that I had done the hardest part, which was walk away, and know that the person that said that to me, like my sister is my soulmate, love of my life. When my mom died, she was 15. I was 24. I moved back in with her to raise her. Wow. So she would have a maternal figure. This was my if anyone is cutting through to me, it is her. So when she used that power, which could have gone in a different direction, her courage.
Yeah, to take a stand.
It eclipsed any. Yeah.
That's love. That's
true. Yes. It eclipsed any of the addiction to him.
That's really beautiful to think about that. Like that connection meant more to you than your addiction, because it's true. I mean, at the core of that is love, and at the core of the other thing is fear and trauma and wounds.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so exactly.
When that type of call forward is demonstrated with like, I'm actually willing to lose you because I love you so much. I'm taking a stand for you and for me. Wow.
Yes. So in that, and then in those days of processing, I had a very clear, like, unintended visual on one of the days when Taylor was playing. Here are the trajectories here, right? Because you're still raw. Making that decision to walk away was the hard part in the beginning. But then honoring myself and doing the work of myself again and again and again and again, in all things, in this conversation and anything about growth, transforming, all of it, I know that you decide once. And then you commit to doing the work again and 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 again.
So speak to that again. So
yeah. The power of decision is akin to the power of belief and conviction. And when you decide, not try, not bullshit yourself, not pussyfoot around.
Yeah.
When you decide, it actually means to cut yourself off from everything that but what you decided. That moment of decision was the ksh-ksh. And then it was my personal responsibility to do the work in alignment to that decision.
So the choice was finally done.
Correct.
When you look back, how long was it until you made the choice? I mean, obviously the necessary life circumstances, but like how long had that decision point been haunting you just throughout your life?
In relative to that relationship, months and months and months and months, and the relationship was only like a year and a half long.
It isn't amazing. Like a short relationship with someone who's fucked up can feel like 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from a personal growth perspective, it is like a smorgasbord. It's an all you can eat.
Yes.
You're basically getting waterboarded your personal growth, you know? Mm-hmm.
I love that. And if you're willing to receive that as what it is, right? If you're willing to receive it as growth, if you're willing to receive it as, and all of this kind of opened me to the trajectory of who I am now, to recognize the objective of our soul, to recognize that my humanness was experiencing something, but it's because my soul needed the lesson in this lifetime as Tracy Litt. And that's how it was being delivered to me. And the thing I know to be true is if you are not willing to get the lesson, the pain and the circumstances to teach you that lesson will get louder and more pervasive until you go, oh shit, it's time.
We all know that. We all know that delay a game and then all of a sudden cosmic fucking tornado to the head.
Yep. Catalyst or choice. That's the game. How bad do you want it to hurt, actually?
Yeah. I remember you said when we first met, which I'm so grateful for. For those of you listening, we met at Kathy Heller's event in Los Angeles. And Tracy was speaking as well. And she said, none of it's real and none of us are getting out of here alive. And like those two simple truths, I think the more we play with the none of it's real, I think the more liberating it is. The more you're like, oh, let's just say this is just a fucking game. Let's just say, then I might as well play and get that observation over my behavior and realize that, let's say I'm like right now, there's people using a computer being our sim character. Like it's, how is it any different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm probably aging myself with the mention of
with
Sims.
The sim. I got you. It's okay. Yeah. We're aging together.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Gracefully.
Yes.
Yeah, that I really love how you said that, because and maybe you could speak to why that's become such a important, you know, it kind of feels like an important linchpin to your work.
It is. It's everything. Well, because there are very few truths in the world, right? Truth with a T-H is very different than true as in T-R-U-E. We all live in our experience of what is true because we live based on perception, and perception is reality. None of us actually experience what's real because none of it's real. And it's all a variation of what you perceive and project and then experience. So when we look at truths, like indisputable truths, there are so few. One of them is we're all going to die.
Can't escape.
Period.
Yeah.
So as soon as you go, oh, right, I'm not getting out of this alive. There's something magical that occurs when you take yourself to that moment where you realize that the truth is you're going to have a lay on your deathbed final breath. I hope for all of us we're 102, but highly unlikely. And you never know. And this was one of the gifts of my mother's passing. You have no idea when that. She was 51. Healthy, not a smoker, not a drinker, none of those things. She started uncovering the emotional connection, the emotional congestion connection to dis-ease in the body. And that's what caused her cancer, right? It's part of my work. I picked up so much of what she couldn't fulfill. So really allowing ourselves to recognize, okay, wait a minute. So one day I'm going to be in that moment. Yeah. And if you allow yourself to just like fast forward there for a hot second and close your eyes. Instant clarity.
So true.
Just
you're
like,
not
boom.
Here to fuck around. And all of a sudden you're like,
fuck.
Yeah. It's almost the gift of a diagnosis, you know, but the diagnosis is, it doesn't require cancer. It just requires the acknowledgement of death. You don't have to wait for the cancer. You could just be like, okay, I'm going to die tomorrow. What matters? And what bullshit am I fucking tolerating in my life?
Like, boom.
Boom. Grab a piece of paper. It's going to flow. Your death you is going to be like, oh, fucking thank God. Like, you've been living like you get to live forever, you selfish son of a bitch, you know?
Exactly. Because the other part of it and how I get to love you is you are the one that's perpetuating the things that you keep saying you don't want.
Right. Right.
Like, hello. There's no lever to pull outside of you that's all of a sudden going to like, do, look, it's all here now.
Yeah.
It's you. So you're either for yourself and you recognize the depth and breadth of your internal power and you go, okay, wait a second. I'm going to die. I'm going to done pussyfooting here. I'm going to stop shrinking here. I'm going to stop tolerating this. I'm going to go after that dream. I'm going to ask that person out. I'm going to finally stop tolerating relationships less than me because that's part of the decision, part of the work I did to align to that decision. Was, I'm not taking the trajectory that teaches my daughter how to breed shitty relationships. Not taking that one. I'm going to take the one where she watches her mother ascend like a fucking phoenix.
Good.
Which like literally that. Was like the on her college essay, she wrote about, I watched my mother ascend from a single mother on food stamps to be one of the most powerful women running a 7-figure personal growth company. And that taught me that I'm limitless.
I mean, that line alone, you're like, okay.
I could die now. I got nothing else.
Yeah, work's done.
Right? Right. But realizing that, you know, you are the creator and you are the solution that you are so badly seeking. And because part of our upbringing and our society and the old paradigms is an external dependency, right? When that finally happens, then this, or when that occurs, then I'll finally, and it's like, wait a minute, you are the common denominator. You are the variable and you are the cause of every effect in your experience. And you need to stop lying to yourself. Feel the fear, own it, or stop saying what you want and live out the life that you're living. But the lack of congruence to I want, I'm ready. And then you're not actually showing up to embody that version of you that receives that lives in it, that knows that's the shift from unworthy to worthy. That's the shift from sleeping to awake. And I will also lovingly yell at you that it's not even just about you. This is where the divine moral responsibility comes in. How are we making this a better world? How are we making this a more loving, progressive, conscious world for your child, for my children? You're dripping things in your children all the time. It's a biological requirement. and you need to change what you're dripping, period.
That level of responsibility. When right, you embrace it as a moral responsibility, then I think our bodies then recognize like, oh, finally, yeah, like you have a moral responsibility to my well-being.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
To our like well-being.
1,000%. And the body, which is this like, you know, linchpin key to all of it, is just waiting for you to come back. You know, it's the thing that's empowering everything. It's allowing me to sit in this chair and open this mouth and have this conversation with you, right? It allows us to love the people we love. It allows us to walk from the bed to the coffee maker. It allows us to turn the light switch on with our, like the body, it's the vessel. It's the thing that empowers everything. And because we just didn't have the understanding and then the models and the teachers that we do now, like this conversation, to go, yo, things went down when you were younger. Nervous system said, I'm going to protect him, her, or they, and I am going to pull her right out of her body because she's not going to experience that pain again. And we're just going to start to live a little dissociated. We're just going to start to live from the neck up. We're just going to lip it on her head. She's going to live in her head. And that is literally then we hit these moments in our 30s, 40s, and 50s where we are so out of alignment. And it's like, what is happening? And the only way is to come back into the body. And then the body goes, oh, hey, I've been waiting for you to finally figure it out.
Welcome back. And, you know, the body will process and tolerate so much toxicity, you know, which is not, you know, any reason to give it more. But if anything, to be like, thank you so much. Like you've put on weight to protect us. You've gotten a lot of inflammatory responses. You have this skin thing, this autoimmune. The body is saying like, come back, come back. And you know, it's so fascinating how when someone does healing work, starts doing breath work, starts, you know, healing the nervous system, starts, I mean, ultimately saying no to shit. Because if you say no to shit, then you learn what yes truly means. Until then, you just got to master no. And then the system goes, oh my gosh, we have access to the word no. And it's like, oh, it's coming ahead of everything. The people pleasing, the da, da, da. And the nervous system gets to go, oh. And maybe for the first time in your whole life, you know, since that moment that you're talking about of separation as a kid.
Of course.
And then your body's going like, oh yeah, we don't need the thing to get you to wake up. And then of course you can't help but choose nourishment in every area. And I was thinking that actually today, I just was observing someone who is, you know, eating fairly poorly. I wasn't judging them. I was just like, oh wow. Like I could recognize old parts of myself in them. And I remember thinking to myself like, man, when I was that way, when I was carrying the extra weight, when I was unhappy and I knew that I was carrying the extra weight. It wasn't like I was walking around overweight thinking I have a six pack, you know, but I was actually just thinking about that I needed that insulation. I needed that sugar to continue to treat the belief that I'm not whole.
Right. Because that was a match for that identity. That's why everything is about identity. Because inside of our identity is the way we see ourselves and the way we see the world and our worldviews and our belief structure and the neuro tags and thoughts that we hold in our mind and the words that we use and the energy that we emit and the armored or unarmoredness of our heart. When you work at the level of your identity, everything else opens up in such a, I'm going to say easier, for lack of a better word, flowier way, because you're working at the level of the root cause instead of trying to create some affirmations, right? Or shift a belief over here or do a mindset practice over here. Everything is luscious and amazing because I'm just thrilled we live in the consciousness revolution and there's so many modalities available. Like there's no more excuses. You can't like belly up to the bar, okay? Pick any of these things that are available to you because something is going to start a shift. And when you're really, really ready to go, okay, it's time to become, you work at the level of the identity. So in that example, in the identity that you are in now that you've evolved into, it's not relevant, appropriate, or desirable for this identity to gorge on a supersized McDonald's meal.
Yeah.
And it's not because of the McDonald's, it's because when you become different, everything becomes different. It's literally like we shared so much about my background and my story. Like I am 14 different evolutions of that girl. I love her. I've integrated her. I talk to her, but that's not me.
And so most of us live in the old identity.
Yeah, well, we live in the current identity that is the problem, that is the thing that's holding you back. And then we look for hacks and tools and little like, well, I'll just use this for now, right? And right. We kind of wait to do things instead of going, okay, I have to do this. I have to show up to this. Because if I continue to live in my current identity, I can't outperform that. I can't outmatch that because your identity is the cornerstone of your reality.
It's at the basis of all the reasons you make the choices that you make.
1,000%.
Of how you perceive yourself and how you hope to be perceived.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, if I'm understanding you correctly, is rooted all in what will keep me safe, perceivably safe.
Yes. And the perception of your conscious mind is different than the perception of your nervous system, which is why if we don't work at the level of your nervous system to start to clear it, recondition it, re-imprint it, regulate it, then nothing will ever change. Yeah. Because wanting and desire at the level of the mind is like cute.
Yeah.
But not effective.
Right. Like great that you're dreaming.
Uh-huh.
Until you actually do the shifting of what safety means, what regulation means, what until you do any of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. To what your nervous system can tolerate.
Yeah.
Right. Like I remember, so in the spirit of my arc and leaving that beautiful moment my sister gave me and doing the work and committing to absolutely focusing on me and starting to do the work and all those things and becoming and yada, yada, yada. I then arrived at a totally different version of myself. And then here comes along, totally not looking unbeknownst to me, my husband, who I've now been married to for 14 years. His name is David and he is luscious, phenomenal, conscious human being. And I remember when I met him, my mind was really excited and I called my sister and I was like, oh my God, it's so cute. He has two daughters. I have a daughter. They're all in the same grade. I mean, they're all the same age group and it's going to be so cute. And how cute would it be? And did it. And I play all those games. And then, you know, he was a good man. So he was dependable. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, I called my son, like, he does everything he says he's going to do. What is this? Right? Right. And all those things. And I remember having to actively sit with my body and my nervous system and work with it to not screw the relationship up, to not throw it out because it was so unfamiliar at the level of my nervous system to have someone who was loving and dependable and honest and thoughtful and a family man and just wanting to like he's my biggest cheerleader. What do you want? Let's do it. You know what I mean? Like it was great that my mind was like, I'm calling this person in. But I had to still, even after I met him, let it be safe. Sit with, oh, it's okay, body. It is safe. Let him love you. Let him do that. Let him move your car so it's closer when you wake up in the morning at his apartment. Like,
that's pretty nice.
He's pretty great. But it's like, but that's the kind of unfamiliarity to me. So we have to work to make the unfamiliar familiar and the familiar unfamiliar. In order for things to really become what we want.
Yeah, moving the familiar to unfamiliar, that's an important recategorization where the body now goes unfamiliar, not desired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. When you talk about like navigating, so you move to the level of awareness mm-hmm. and then you move to a deeper understanding of your own current identity, is that right? And then what? Mm-hmm.
An important kind of beginning step too. So awareness is the queen of it all. And then the next piece is starting to relate to your body, kind of like I was explaining. I would, you know, mm-hmm. I'd feel like that, oh my God, what is this? What is this? And you, once you start to relate to your body, you become much better at noticing when it gets constricted, which means it's dysregulated, or when it feels really like chill and safe and expansive. So you start to work with those moments where you're like, ooh, there's contraction. And instead of ignoring it, or leaving the body again, you stay with it and you breathe into it, right? And there's all these different ways that we play with the body and giving it safety. So then you're allowing your system to titrate, which means to make small little micro shifts until you've kind of made a full shift of feeling safer and safer and safer and safer, right? And now relationally in my marriage, I am like, it's so acclimated to this level of love. It's outrageous. And my ability to go back into my femininity as a result of this relationship is like awe-inspiring, because to get through what I had to shut my heart off and I had to masculine my way through everything. And he has taught me, like, let me open the peanut butter jar. Sit down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, open everything.
My wife and I talk joke about that. She like hands me a jar and I'm like, without me, you don't get peanut butter.
That's right. That's right. I am your man. Let me provide. But that's important. That's important. So then to really answer your question, the other piece to this identity evolution that's really important is actually transcending your current identity. And we do this in like a dropping your brain waves meditative visualization process. I'm also a hypnotherapist, so we play with stuff like that. To transcend out of your current identity and pull you into the future. Because if you don't have a really crystal clear, heart open connection with the person you're becoming, then it's fuzzy to be able to align to that and let that version of you lead. So it's creating the vision of your life, or let's say your romantic relationship. And then we zero in on who is that version of you. Because where visions and vision boards can sometimes go awry is we end up focusing too much on the things in it and the outcomes in it, instead of realizing the thing we need to prioritize is who's the version of you that's in it, that's there already, that's loving it, living it, marinating it, acclimated to it. Their nervous system is that life.
Right.
And we drill into that with specificity. And then you know who's leading, because it's not you anymore. Yeah. You're demoted. Right. You're out of here. It's time to let that version of you lead now.
Have you found that for people when they're going through this process, by the time they made it to you, they've made it to this process, and it might be through any mechanism, but when they've made it to you, because you've seen so many people go through this, are they actually like super excited and welcoming to this new version? They're like, take the wheel, you know?
Yes, yes. And a big part of our work in neuroidentity evolution is processing emotion.
Yeah. Tons. So the feelings that come up when...
The feeling, like how to actually feel your feelings and how to recalibrate your nervous system to let you feel your feelings, and what it means to operate with emotion from a higher level of consciousness, because our work is about consciousness ultimately. Yeah. And emotion in higher consciousness is energy in motion. Emotion in lower level consciousness is good, bad, right, wrong. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to open Pandora's box. If I start to cry, I'll cry forever. But the truth about
it has a framework or judgment to it.
Right, exactly.
Good or bad, whatever.
That's what we were taught. That's what we were raised. I mean, I have yet to have a gorgeous student that was raised in a liberally emotional household. That's it. That's like, that's like an oxymoron. That doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah. And to think it's that all emotion is energy in motion, you know, emotion, it makes sense.
Right. It is energy in motion. And what's important about that is when we're not in our bodies, it's just stuck. And unprocessed emotion keeps your system cycling in a stress cycle that never gets complete. And it's so detrimental because it keeps us living in this little like chronic acute dysregulation.
Yeah.
But because we don't know what feeling good feels like, we don't realize what we've been tolerating. And that's what we see the most when we're like, what is this? Why do I feel like I'm about to become the sun? That's what a client said to me yesterday. She's like, I just feel like, am I photosynthesizing? What is happening? Why do I like, you know?
Actually, yes.
Yes, you are, right? But that is what it feels like to become a more highly conscious being in a third dimensional world. What it feels like to go from not feeling and stifling so much unconsciously through repression and suppression, and feeling and being expressed and allowing your truth to come out and shining and taking up space. That's why we're here, right? Like, you're here listening to this. Like, the odds of you actually being here, when we really consider all of the happenstances of the people that like, if you imagine the trajectory of your we all have a father and a mother, indisputable, okay? For the father and the mother to stay alive long enough to then have divine intervention for those two people to come together, whether it was in one night or a lifetime of love or somewhere in between, to then have the rare moment of conception, which is really hard, actually, to then have you be born and stay alive through many, 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 many years to be old enough to listen to this podcast, hello, you're a miracle.
Right.
What are you doing with that miracle? Exactly. Right? Because if you treated yourself like the miracle you are, you'd be shoulders back, tits out, let's go. I'm ready to rock. Yeah. And it feels good to live like that, because anything else is just survival and you're not here for survival.
Yeah. Amen to that. Tracy Litt. Damn. I'm so happy that I got to ask you these questions, and I can't wait to have you back on. I feel like we need a 3-hour time block.
Yes, let's do that.
Because, wow, that's so great. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your experience and just like your brilliance. I'm so grateful that we were introduced, my sister from another mister.
That's right. Thank you. I feel the same about you, as you know. And I feel so grateful that we went to all the places we went to today.
Yeah, me
because
too.
I think it's so good. Happy. It feels so good too, like in my own processing, just to speak it and acknowledge it and reflect on it. And I get to do that often. So thank you.
Yeah, I've got emotional more than a few times in this one alongside you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Where can people find more of you?
At the Tracy Litt on Instagram is the best place to hang out.
Great. And for more information on your program?
Yes, theschoolofbecoming.com. Everything Perfect. Lives there.
Okay, awesome. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.